is CBS Eye on the World. I'm John Batchelor. Roscosmos, the original and successful dream of the space exploration now we take routine, was dreamed up sometime between the 1920s and the 1950s by a number of visionaries in Russia who became Roscosmos. We come now to 1967. The original generation was still in authority, but passing the baton on to men and women who were dreaming of a moon landing and a moon colonization. David Livingston joins me as my colleague and co-host. This is Hotel Mars, Episode N, and we're very pleased to welcome Anatoly Zak, who keeps the Russian space web and is doing important lifting of Russian material from the 1960s. He translates it into English for us, and with many, many design drawings and visions of what Russia was about in the moon race. This is the first of several components that Roscosmos is dreaming, the moon first. Anatoly, this is an excellent piece. I mentioned Russian Space Web is a subscription site. I heartily recommend. This is a fascination about the Cold War, but also this is a vision of exploration in the future that is intact here in the 21st century. It's passed to other hands, to younger men and women, but it's still there, the dream of the moon. Anatoly, congratulations. We begin with how the Russians, Roscosmos, thought about the moon. There was a lander, 5 or 6 days. There was a station, 6 months. And there was a base, permanent. That was their concept. Have I said that correctly? And how did they imagine those three things working together? What was their vision of the moon race? Good evening to you.
Hello, John. Yes, that's an excellent introduction. And exactly, the 1967 was kind of optimistic year for the Soviet space program. That's when, actually, was coincidentally, that was the year when Soviet Union was about to celebrate its 50th anniversary of its existence since the 1922 when it was founded. And exactly the time when kind of first space craze originated in Europe and in the Soviet Russia. So in 1967, still before the first moon landing, when the Soviet space program was really at its peak, when there was a very active development of the first expedition to the moon. But what's interesting, the strategists of the Soviet space program, they saw the moon not as a kind of one-time destination where they would go, plant a flag, and they leave. What they really planned and what they really envisioned is going to happen and how they hoped it's going to work is that they will first land one single cosmonaut on the moon. That's how the L3 project was designed, the first Soviet lunar expedition. But then immediately they planned to upgrade this hardware and essentially built a spacecraft for long expeditions on the moon, which would last up to 1 month. And then they would build what they called the space station, which would be visited periodically by the crews, which would stay, like you mentioned, up to 6 months. And then in the next step, they would build permanent base like we're doing now in Antarctica. That's how they envisioned it. They were absolutely sure that the first expedition, first flag planting expedition would lead inevitably to permanent presence of the humans on the surface of the moon. And it would last for generations and it would be pretty much permanent. And they saw the moon race at the time as just the first step within this process.
David, you have a question.
Anatoly, in looking back on this great vision, and it is a great vision, with what you know about Russian history, was any of this plausible, or were they fooling themselves back in 1967?
That's a complicated question, and let me put it this way: I think it was, first of all, it depended on the performance of the N1 rocket. Correct. So the main thing for make this happen was the rocket, which would work reliably, which would fly very often, and which would be able to deliver this very heavy cargo to the moon from year to year, from year on, for basically indefinitely. So this dream, of course, didn't work. We know now from history, looking in hindsight, that this rocket didn't work. But if it did, and we saw experience, for example, from the Saturn V flight experience, that it was quite successful. So essentially, if there was a political will and there was enough money, it would be possible from the engineering standpoint to build a system which would be able to support lunar base on a permanent basis. And the Soviet Union was behind in this process, but not that far behind, which I would say was completely impossible for them. If the architecture of the N1 rocket was more successful, and if the engines which they developed were more reliable, they would be able to probably land on the moon after the United States, that's for certain. But they probably would be able still to explore space and maintain lunar base using, let's say, rockets like Energia, which they built in the 80s. And by the way, which was also conceived originally to do lunar exploration. And again, as we know, in hindsight, was very successful technologically. So I would say it was 50-50. It was possible, but it would be expensive. It would be technologically difficult, but it was possible.
N1, that is the heavy lift. You have drawings in your very careful explanation. N1 would have a kerosene first stage and a hydrogen second, third, and even fourth stage. And you report that that's comparable to Saturn. Is that all that correct, Anatoly?
Yes. So essentially the aspiration was to build an architecture somewhat similar to Saturn V rocket. As we know, the Saturn V had a kerosene first stage, which used kerosene and liquid oxygen as an oxidizer. And then on top of it, there were hydrogen stages, which were very effective. And essentially, N1 had the same kind of development path in its first incarnations beyond the original version, which was all three main stages would be all kerosene, because it was just easier. The Soviet Union had more experience with kerosene engines. But the aspiration was, and actually they actively worked at that time, in 1967, they actively worked on hydrogen engines, which would really improve the performance of the vehicle. First of all, it would give them ability to land instead of one cosmonaut on the surface of the moon. It would be possible to do two or three people on the moon, which, of course, much more practical and much more much better for lunar exploration. And so they had a very active development program for hydrogen engines at that time. And by the way, this program eventually led to Energia, and it's also led to Indian rocket, which is flying today, which is a kind of direct descendant of the engine which Soviet Union started developing at that time.
125 tons to low Earth orbit in 69, 170 tons to low Earth orbit in 1970. A two-launch scenario of an N1 vehicle, 225 tons to low Earth orbit in 1971, and then we have an alternative, which is 270 tons, two-launch scenario, N1 vehicle, 1973. This is enormously ambitious. It's wonderful to read now. 270 tons of low Earth orbit. What are they planning to do with that? Is that for the moon, to assemble a moon craft?
Yes, essentially. So all the entire development path for the N1 rocket was to build a vehicle which would be able to sustain a lunar base, but also build larger and farther flying vehicles for deep space exploration using multiple launch scenarios. So, for example, if the original N1 rocket had flown successfully, they could upgrade it further with hydrogen upper stages, and then use also assembly in orbit, and either in orbit around the Earth or in the orbit around the moon, in order to build bigger spacecraft for exploration of the moon, but also for expeditions to Mars, which was always kind of end point strategy, and all Soviet strategists kind of envisioned that it would end up in the end doing expedition to Mars.
David, you have a question.
Anatoly, it's such an incredible vision, and it shows that the Soviet Union viewed and appreciated and understood something about the moon and space that the U.S. did not view or appreciate, since we were doing flags and footsteps to the moon and then we were going to go home and the project ended. what did they want to do all of this for in space? Did they have like a commercial space concept of getting resources, or was it all for science, or was any of it for economic reasons, or what was their motivation for it?
That's another complicated but very interesting question, because we see kind of reading between the lines of the of those 1967 documents, we actually see what they... So they, of course, had no concept. Remember that Soviet Union was a communist state, so there was no such concept as private or, how to say, free enterprise or anything like that. There are no mention of that at all. However, they do mention economic activity. So, for example, they talk about production of the rocket propellant and work with water. They already have this all these concepts, which were very popular today. They've already been discussed in 1967. For example, they already mentioned that they know that probably there is a water ice on the moon, and they can produce oxygen for the lunar base, and they can produce rocket fuel. So all these concepts are there. Then they're talking about one interesting element. They're talking about military importance of the moon as well. And, of course, we know now documents from the 1950s in the United States where they were considering in like late 50s military lunar base. So they're talking about importance of the moon from the military standpoint. And then, of course, science, the astrophysics, they do know, they do realize that if they put the radio antenna or radio telescope on a far side of the moon, they have this essentially protection from interference from Earth. They know about, of course, that they can put telescopes, which are very large structures, which could be used for the exploration of the universe. They're already talking about biological research. They're talking, of course, about geology and mining, as I mentioned. So all this kind of applications, which are very popular in discussion today, they're already kind of embedded in those documents and in those strategies in 1967.
We're speaking with Anatoly Zak. He keeps the Russian Space Web, a subscription site I recommend for the stories of the 1960s that we'll see reproduced again in the 21st century with the ambition to reach Mars. And when we come back, interplanetary travel. That was part of the dream for Roscosmos in 67. David Livingston, Dr. Space of The Space Show. This is Hotel Mars, Episode N. I'm John Batch.
Stay tuned for more of CBS Eye on the World with John Batchelor.